interview with Vivian Littlefield, who served as a dean of the School of Nursing from 1984 to 1999, longer than any of her predecessors. The interview was done on December 11th, 2001. She was interviewed by Cygnet Cooper. Vivian, first of all, I'd like some personal information. Would you tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in Princeton, Kentucky, on January the 24th, 1938.
And what were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Hester Hayden Moore, and my father's name was Willard Anson Moore.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
I have both a brother and a sister. My sister's name is Cecile Settle, and my brother's name is Willard Moore II.
And what about your children?
Well, I have two biological children, Jenny Littlefield, who lives in Colorado, works for the corporate headquarters in Safeway, and I have a son whose name is Darryl Littlefield, and he owns a ranch and does ranching with all kinds of about 45 different animals.
Hmm. Now let's talk about your education. Why did you decide to go into nursing? What influenced you?
Well, when I was a little girl, my grandfather was a physician, a country doctor, if you will, and he saw patients in his home and in a clinic, and I went with him, and I thought I was his helper. I helped take care of patients. I went with him on home visits, and I would tell people I was going to be a doctor like Graham. And of course, people told me I couldn't. I was a girl, and so I assumed I had to do something different. And so to me, the next best thing to be in the health field was to be a nurse. And so that's what I wanted to be. I didn't get to do that because my parents were opposed to it. And so I had to go off to college and major in something fine arts oriented. But when I was there, very shortly, I changed my major into nursing.
So you started out at Texas Christian?
I did. Mm-hmm. I started out as a ballet major, fine arts major, and when I got involved in that, that was a very rigorous physical thing, and I still thought I had to do something that was a career-oriented and earned a living, so I changed very quickly, I think in the first semester, and changed my major to nursing.
And how did you happen to select that school?
Well, again, my father was very influential in the schools I was looking at, and he picked out schools that he knew because he had good football teams, because he was quite a football fan. And this school is, I was a member of the Disciples of Christ, and this school was known. It was a very liberal school. It was a very open school in terms of lots of opportunities. And so I selected it of the ones I looked at. I also kind of checked to see if they had a nursing school.
And did you have any unusual experiences as a student?
Yes, it was a very good experience. One of my role models and mentors was the dean of the school. It was a small enough school in which the dean taught some of the nursing classes, and she actually told me when I was in my undergraduate program I should be a dean, and she watched my career and urged me to go into academic leadership over time. And it was a time of shortage, nursing faculty shortage, and when I was a senior, I had a clinical position in which I taught the undergraduate students in their first clinical course, because I was seen as a good clinician and teacher, and so I was teaching when I was a senior in nursing school.
And who was the dean?
Her name was Lucy Harris.
Oh, and that the School of Nursing now has her name?
Right. Well, actually, I think her name, this is, there was a Dr. Harris, too, that, you know, the school was named for, but, and somehow she was attracted there, and her name was Harris, too. But she was, she tried to get me to come back and be the dean at TCU a number of times over my career. So that was interesting.
And what was the date of your graduation?
1960.
Okay, and your master's is from the University of Colorado?
Mm-hmm, right.
And talk a little bit about that experience.
Well, shortly after graduation, I worked in Fort Worth, and then I went to Colorado. My husband at the time had a position there, and so I moved to Colorado, and I went back to school. I was working in Colorado, and I went back to school and got my graduate degree, and from there began to teach in a number of areas in the school. Maternal child nursing, I also was an assistant dean there, and I had a lot of leadership positions in the undergraduate program and in maternal child and in continuing education. So over that career, I did a lot of different things, and also was a supervisor at Colorado General Hospital in charge of OBGYN.
And when did you get your master's?
1964.
And your PhD is in higher education from the University of Denver?
Right.
And what about that experience? Anything unusual?
Well, I did that while I was a faculty member at the University of Colorado, and of course teaching and being a faculty member without a doctorate, you know, I knew I had to complete this degree, and I worked on it for many years, and I had 1 year of experience to finish it where I didn't have to work so I could complete my work, which was a wonderful experience. My major professor was Alan Finister, and he was also, he wrote the book about academic leadership, and he was studying academic leaders and how they influence, and he was a wonderful scholar and teacher and mentor for me, and so I was able to work under him and with people in the field in terms of studying both how you educate and how you lead within an academic setting, how you manage budgets, how you do all the kinds of things that deans do.
And your dissertation?
My dissertation was called Learning Environments in University Health Professional Continuing Education.
And actually, Signe, some of your work influenced me because, of course, I read it and quoted it in my work, and I studied adult learning, and you'll know that the faculty member who developed that theory is from University of Wisconsin,
right.
And so I began to learn about some of the people at Wisconsin in this work, and I studied how use of adult learning principles influenced the use of the content learned in professional practice for physicians and nurses and pharmacists, and so I was able to apply principles of learning, education, and how the outcomes resulted from that.
Now, you've talked about some of your work experiences while you were a student. It always seems to me too bad that the graduate students have to work so hard at working.
Mm-hmm.
That while they're trying to complete their degrees, but I think that's been probably the rule rather than the exception. I think that that's been the story of many graduate students, including students here. Was there anything about your experience when you taught maternal child health at the University of Colorado? Anything unusual or?
Well, I think the thing that was the opportunity I had was at the time that I was there, the idea of the nurse practitioner was being started, and Lee Ford was
right
there. And it was so objected to by the faculty in all schools that we had to go to the continuing education arm to create it. And so the nurse practitioner programs were created in continuing education, if you recall.
Yes.
And she lobbied for me to go and head up, and I became the associate dean in continuing education and began to create a women's healthcare nurse practitioner program as a new entity for the first one in the country. And because she was leading the practitioner movement, I became part of that and learned from her and, you know, really found her a mentor and a support. But I was able to start the women's healthcare program. I had my own practice. You know, we began to do a number of things and begin to do the studies in terms of patient satisfaction within the perinatal experience with delivering a particular kind of care. So that opportunity was great. And I did get to be an assistant dean in that setting. And the turmoil in the school and the conflict, I spent a lot of time managing that and working with that during those periods of time. Colorado did a lot of different and innovative things during the time, and there was always a practice piece of what we were good at.
In 1969, you developed a new school of nursing at the University of Kentucky. That must have been a challenge. Tell me about it.
It was indeed. Some of my personal life influences where I've moved to, and in this case, my first husband wanted to start a business, and my father needed help in one of his, so we returned to Kentucky. And I was recruited to start the school nursing that had been controversial and between two small communities that competed with each other and were very different, decided they'd have one nursing school between the two. So I had two options. One was in a trailer, and one was in a very sophisticated building and in a very sophisticated community. And bringing those two different communities together, the two very different medical practices who had not had a school of nursing, and two very different philosophies about education within community colleges, and it was part of a whole system, a Kentucky statewide system, so I worked in the system and learned about the politics, the process of getting curriculum approved within a system, and it was indeed a very interesting experience. I rode up and down the road between these two offices all the time, so it was quite interesting and quite challenging.
And is the school still in existence?
Yes, it is still in existence. I think they might have separated it and been two. I'm not sure about that, but it's clearly in existence. It's one of the strongest ones in the system, and it attracts, or it did the last time I heard about it, still attracted lots of students. The challenge in that part of the country was to get nurses, and creating a school there in that helped people that didn't go away to school.
And after that, you went back to the University of Colorado?
I did, and I'm confused now about what I did when I went back to Colorado, and I know that I ended up being in continuing education running the nurse practitioner programs. So I must have gone back to do that towards the end and had been an assistant dean earlier. And so going back to Colorado, again, had to do with a family move. The business didn't work out, and it was a challenge, and so we needed to return to Colorado. And so I felt good about being able to return and had many opportunities when I did return.
Just before coming to Madison, you were an associate professor and department chairman for women's healthcare nursing and the clinical chief for OBGYN nursing at the University of Rochester in New York. You maintained your research and publication interests in women's healthcare issues during your deanship. Now that must have been another challenge.
Well, the job was a challenge. It was one of my favorite jobs. It was an incredible job. I ran a huge OBGYN service, neonatal care, huge GYN operating room, cancer center for GYN oncology, perinatal center, high risk. I had my own patients came on call, and then I had the graduate programs and the doctoral program. We started a new doctoral program, and I was involved in that as a faculty. And, you know, began to conduct the research that, you know, I did post my doctorate. Again, Lee Ford was the dean, and she had recruited me there. I had worked in Colorado, and she recruited me to do the women's health care program and to be the clinical chief. All of us had joint appointments, ran the hospital, ran the ambulatory clinics, and had an academic appointment. We had lots of assistants. I had associate. And it was the unification model that was the new way to try and integrate practice and research into academia for nursing. And it was, for me, one of the best experiences working with medicine, in that we, the OBGYN clinical chief, who was Henry Thieb, he absolutely advocated for and supported nurse midwifery. Mm-hmm. So his value of the nursing world and what nurses could do was great. And together, we ran the service, created educational programs. We created special programs for physicians to learn things that weren't in their curriculum. It was a really positive experience, but it was absolutely exhausting. I mean, one can do that kind of job probably. I did it, I think, 7 years, but that's pretty much all you ought to do.
That sounds strenuous. Okay, now let's talk about your experience at Wisconsin. What factors influenced your decision to accept the position of dean at the School of Nursing?
Well, there were some senior faculty that would see me in meetings, and because, you know, I had done a number of some work with the nurse practitioner programs and was into practice, some people would, like Emily Campbell, I remember seeing mm-hmm. her. I remember talking to you about Wisconsin mm-hmm. once. We had lunch in some mm-hmm. meeting somewhere. I admired your work and you, and so I began to sort of get recruited. I was realizing that I could not continue this running the world there in the nursing service. It was an incredibly demanding job, and I felt like I needed a space, I thought, to do writing and publishing and those kinds of things. And I wasn't thinking about a deanship. I was thinking more about trying to regroup and spend more time on my scholarly pursuits. But people asked me to explore this, and I became fascinated with the university and its philosophy. And so I kind of got intrigued.
And what about some of your early impressions of the school when you did come here?
Well, some of my impressions of the school was it had done a tremendous amount to have high quality education on very limited resources. I was shocked at how limited the resources were, how little faculty made, and none of us made a whole lot in those days, but I was shocked at what people made, how many students you educated, especially undergraduate students. I was impressed with the absolute commitment towards research and the university's high expectations, which were incredibly high for where nursing was in its development. And so those were some of my early impressions. A school that had a great vision, that was working very hard with very little resources.
And what were some of the challenges you faced as the dean, or perhaps obstacles?
Well, the first challenge was trying to find out about the resources and how to allocate them in order to move the school where it absolutely had been mandated to move. That was into the research area and doctoral education, which had just been approved, without new money. In other words, my constant orientation to be dean was You can start a doctoral program, but you will not get any new money. You may not spend any money on offices or anything like that. The last person who we had here who bought themselves a couch was fired. You do not spend money on frivolous things. You don't get new money for the new programs. You do it within the money you have, and I think that was what was the only way the school could get the agreement, was to agree they would do it within the resources they had. So my challenge was to figure out how to reallocate within what I had to get the job done. And so that was a major challenge. I thought that we needed to look at the programs we had and how they should be done. There was also a plan to integrate continuing education, so that was a new thing in which there were different opinions about whether that should be done or not and how it should be done. So integrating that program with sort of a mandate, with some embracing, people thinking it's a great idea, some people not understanding it, some people having resisted it, that was a challenge. Our graduate programs were small. We needed more students. Our undergraduate students were not progress. I mean, a lot of them that were admitted did not progress because we admitted so many students, believing that they should have access to education, for public education, but they were not progressing and they were not all successful, and that was very sad. And there was another issue that I had to deal with during that time. Oh, and the tenure process was so challenging. We had very worrisome success in tenure, and that had to be dealt with. We had, at the time, we had, I don't know how many assistant professors, 18 or so, and all of them were teaching clinical as well as heavy theory. So they had incredibly heavy loads to achieve research in this type of university. So those were my, how was I going to get all these tenured, these professors tenured, how was I going to get them time to do research, integrate continuing education, and integrate a doctoral program that had to be top quality and top notch in order to be successful, because they only gave us 5 years.
And what about getting faculty?
Well, we already had a lot of faculty. I had no money to get new faculty. Mm. I had absolutely no free money. There was no positions available, and I had no money to recruit new ones. So that was another challenge, because, you know, we couldn't recruit tenured faculty. And I, you know, when I created an administrative structure that I worked on, I had no new money to create any new positions or whatever. I had to do it again within the resources that were allocated to administration. So I had to be creative with the budget. I had to figure out how private dollars could supplement that. I had to figure out how I was going to get time for the assistant professors to succeed, and they had to have their assignment changed. And I think I made major efforts to change the assistant professors' assignment so they could have time to do what they had to do, and that was research.
What would you say gave you the most satisfaction in the dean's position?
I think the thing that I think was most satisfying is seeing young faculty or new faculty succeed as researchers and scholars, you know, move up the ranks, become tenured, be senior faculty. Seeing the doctoral students progress to become real scholars and hearing about their success in other places. Seeing the graduate students become top-notch clinicians or administrators, you know, seeing the people in the school progress and become clinicians, scholars, and leaders. And that, you know, I have this blanket that the doctoral students made for me. You know, every one of them wrote something, and I kept up with all those students and how they were achieving so that we could report their success, which of course we had to, for the doctoral review. And so seeing all those people mature was what I liked best.
Good. What persons in the university were most helpful to you, in the university or elsewhere?
Well, I had two great chancellors. Shane, I absolutely admired him, his thought process, his philosophy. And when he announced his resignation in a dean's meeting, I broke out in tears. Now, this was very embarrassing. I'm the only woman around. And he apologized to me for not being more involved with nursing. He said, "Vivian, I had too many things. There were too many crises. I could not be there and support you. You did what you did yourself. I couldn't be there." But he was a respectful chancellor, and he allowed me to do my thing. He didn't micromanage. He didn't discourage. He didn't. He let me do it the way the faculty and I decided to do it, which was not what all deans had. So I had freedom. Donna Shalane was an absolutely wonderful boss because she believed in nursing. She understood it. She could ask the questions in these meetings where we were defending our programs that allowed me to tell the best story I could tell. You know, if somebody else was attacking something we weren't doing, Donna would come in with a question that she knew that I could answer that would be positive, because she knew enough about us. She also treated me like a colleague. I've never had a female chancellor. She asked me to play golf, and she made it known that we played golf so that I was seen as a senior dean, which I was at the time. So that was great. And Dave Kindy was wonderful to me. As a vice chancellor, we did interdisciplinary education together. We created some research groups together. And we worked very well within the health sciences, and so I was very fortunate to have Dave Kindy as vice chancellor in the thing. And then there were some senior faculty who I found very supportive in the school, who worked very hard to move the school forward, and they were very supportive and straight with me, and there were a few of those that made a lot of difference. Because there were people who thought I wasn't the right dean because I was, quote, a clinical person instead of a researcher. And so I was constantly needing to prove, that I really was. I had done a lot of other things, but I clearly had a vision and a commitment to scholarship and research and believed that nursing needed to put a lot of its eggs in that basket to survive. And so, there were people who helped me do that, and that one of the reasons I was so committed to continuing my own research and scholarship and became part of interdisciplinary research teams to demonstrate that I was also a researcher, because I thought that the school needed to convince others that we were, in fact, scholars as well as educators. And so I made that effort to be part of research teams to continue my own work, talk about it.
What would you say was the best thing that happened to you while you were the dean?
The best thing? Well, there were a lot of good things. I think the best thing that happened was when the university approved the doctorate in nursing. And that was so important because of the way it was done. Because it wasn't just done, it was done with respect. And I think it turned the tide in terms of many people's view that we would be, and we were scholars, and we were in fact creating a quality program. And the vision to have the secondary concentration was a great one, because there were lead faculty from all kinds of disciplines who were so involved with our students and our program that they could lobby for us and say that we were in fact scholars and researchers and were doing a fine job. Because, for a doctoral program that was approved politically instead of the university, to change that attitude, to me it changed the world I walked in the university. It changed the faculty respect for the school nursing scholarship. So that was one. And I think another thing that was very important to me, because it was a goal of mine, was when I was named the head of the health sciences and the chair of that group, and essentially ran the health science issues for several years there. And, you know, for me to be appointed the chair was, the other deans were new, but
right.
That was, and I would have enjoyed having that position continue. I liked it. I don't know if I had something to do with it. They decided to do away with it, but they didn't need it.
I'm sure not. Well, then, what was the worst thing that happened, or the greatest disappointment to you?
I'm trying to read what I thought about. This took me a while to think about what was the worst thing that happened and the greatest disappointment. I think my greatest disappointment was that all the resources that I worked very hard to get really worked hard to get for faculty that I thought allowed them to have similar resources to other researchers, that is, startup packages, time out of their academic teaching role in order to focus on research, like scholarship semesters, sabbaticals, special internal research funds to begin their research, helping put a process in place so they could compete successfully in the university graduate school competition, so that we could get more extramural funds and more recognition and more money in order for them to conduct the research. My greatest disappointment was all those resources, including professorships. There were 3 Helen Dinn Schulte professorships and 2 others that were established during my deanship, did not result in the continuing escalation of extramural research. Now, I can explain some of that because of the declining resources based on the competition in NINR, but there should have been more success and more effort to get extramural funds on the part of the faculty who had all the internal funds. And my greatest disappointment was that there was not more of that, and there was not as many second research grants written after a successful first grant. And as dean, I thought my role was to encourage, find resources, and to support, and I really am sad that that has not progressed like it should have from my point of view. So that was my greatest disappointment. And I think the worst thing that happened was that some of the senior leaders in the school, with their own personal frustration about what they thought ought to or ought not happen, begin to focus on me as the source of that, rather than to recognize all the things that contributed to that, and didn't even ask for information about some of the things they were concerned about. I mean, they didn't ask for clarification, they didn't check out what their perceptions were, and so that was the greatest disappointment after having worked with people for a very long time and pushing very hard to move the school in the next directions, to have had misinformation about reality, that at least some of clearly misinformation, was the worst thing that's ever happened. And, you know, I look at what I might have done differently to have avoided that. I think there are things I could have done. I didn't have all the clues I needed. So that was the worst thing that happened.
What major changes did you see in the school of nursing during your tenure?
Well, I've already talked about, I do think there was a very different quality and quantity of research. I think there was a very different support system put in place for the tenure process to help people get there. I think that that the accreditation process, when I became dean, the school was not accredited. I think that's probably political, but it wasn't. Became, from my point of view, very easy. We put things in place that you just kind of wrote up what you were doing, because we already had assessment in place and it was part of the, we built it into the system, so I think the process was improved. I think that we changed the tenure process in terms of success. There were a lot of non-successes early. There have been a lot of successes since. It takes a lot of work and sometimes an appeal. But I think that was some major changes.
In your 16 years as dean, you made many contributions to the school and accomplished a great deal. What do you consider your greatest contribution? What do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for caring about the people and the profession and creating an environment for academic quality. I was very invested in the people because I think nursing has had a challenge to succeed, and I think we still have them. And it is the people who have to make it work. And I'm glad there are people out there that can make it from here. And I had something to do with being a part of their development, mentoring them, encouraging them.
Well, now I'm going to list some of your many contributions as dean. And I'll list them not in order of importance, but I'd like you to comment on each of them. One, the establishment of named chairs and professorship.
Well, this was an exciting thing to do. I mean, we had Helen and Schulte professors, but that fund grew and we invested in and took care of it. And then we were able to really make the professorship have legitimate funds for the people to move their work forward, and I encouraged expanding the number and actually recruiting someone from outside because I was very worried about our ability to recruit senior faculty. It's very hard to do, and I felt like we needed that. The Rutherford chair was absolutely delightful with a young elderly man who just decided he was going to give a chair in nursing, and nobody really knows why, but he did. And that was fun, especially since he was from Ohio, and one of my main colleagues is the dean in Ohio, and he lives in her backyard and gave us the professorship. So I love to tease her about that. That's a friendly thing between two colleagues. You were going to ask a question. So it was great because we have Joyce Fitzpatrick publishes the endowed chairs in, I'm trying to think, which journal she does it in. She publishes.
Oh.
And ours, we have the most. I mean, there's somebody else who has five, but we had five at the time. And so she published those. And so this was, I think, a major achievement. I do think that the criteria for continuing that professorship and the expectations for productivity out of them needs to be looked at and examined, because I do think we need to get more bucks for our bucks, if you will, more grants returned for having people who have used that money. And that's another dilemma, because I always believed if we gave nurses the startup money, the resources, they could compete. Of course, we still have not nearly as much money to compete in, and competing in all the fields is still a challenge for us, other fields in my age. So those were fun things.
And the Helen Dem Schulte professorships were from money from the first dean of the School of Nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And I, having known her a little bit, I often think of, wouldn't she be proud of what we've done with her money?
Right.
And it is that money has done quite well. In fact, it's done so well that given another philosophy of the trust, we could have more money to use.
Mm.
And that's how I was able to do startup packages. There was a dean's discretionary fund in that fund, and I was able to use that for startup time, for internal research grants and so forth. I was very careful to use it for scholarship and, you know, moving the school forward. And that was an absolute, I don't know if that fund had not been there, but the school had the money to move it forward. And that's all we had.
Yeah.
So that was the extra money that made us able to move the school forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, during your tenure, the DACRA program, which had started out as jointly with psychology, was moved into a doctorate in nursing.
And I've talked a little bit about that, and that is one of the things that was one of the things that I was most proud of. And the process involved, I can't believe we had an external review committee, we had several internal review committees of faculty. We also had to go to the university committee. We also had to go to the graduate committee. I have never seen so many different committees that had to review this, and they reviewed it down to reading every dissertation and every paper I think the students published. I have never seen such an in-depth review. And it was an incredible, I think that they would just create another committee to be, are you sure these people could do this in 5 years? You know, because 5 years is not long to establish, you know, a doctoral program, you know, so it was an incredible review. And Donna Shalala was very good, I had said that before. But it was intense.
Also during your tenure, the number of prepared faculty increased, and there was expanding faculty research. Want to talk about that?
Well, I talked a little bit about it, and increasing the numbers of prepared faculty outside of graduates within the area. I mean, that was the very important thing to do, to balance people from external places. Moving women, and especially women who've established families or other connections, is very difficult. And so it was a very hard thing to do to get people to come that were already senior. And many times people who were senior and who'd headed up new areas of thinking would not meet the tenure criteria. So they might be tenured someplace else, but tenure here was another challenge. So that was a very difficult thing, and getting senior people was very hard. We could have hired a lot more faculty if we had hired more people from doctoral programs within the University of Wisconsin-Madison, not necessarily nursing. But there was a concern that we didn't have too many. That was one of the reviews they made. In the doctoral program, we had to have people from other places, so we limited. Many of our doctoral students wanted to stay, but we took positions that we would not do that until they went elsewhere and became tenured. And then once that happens, sometimes they're so established we can't get them back. So that was very hard to do that. I also wanted to and made some progress in doctor prepared clinical faculty. To me, all the clinical faculty should be doctor prepared and could be in this university. And there's not as much a rigid rule about having doctorates from the university from that, but to me, each of our clinical faculty also ought to have a scholarship program. Not necessarily NIH funded research, but they ought to be publishing and leading in their area of clinical expertise in the clinical fields. Educational fields, and that we ought to have a whole cadre of doctoral prepared people, and that ought to be. And I created and lobbied for promotional opportunities for these people. And when I came, you may recall that
they had a two-year rule, so they could only teach for 2 years and they were gone. Well, they never even learned the curriculum. There was a lot of dissatisfaction. These people had no career goals. I believe these people that we needed a whole group of clinical faculty, academic staff. This university runs on academic staff that had the jobs that were important, that were scholarships and clinical practice and things. So that's a whole core of people that I think could enhance this school if we created, continued to build on those who have scholarship as well as clinical expertise. So to me, that's a beginning opportunity, but we need to move forward. We've lost a lot of senior people in that group, and I hope there is an effort to recruit. Now, we could have filled all those positions with tenure-track people, but the support and the time needed to make tenure doesn't allow the work to get done. And so that's how this university, how the researchers are successful. They have a lot of academic staff running the undergraduate and graduate programs and doing the hard work that it takes to run the university. And I think that's a legitimate group of people here that need to be valued, rewarded, promoted, and paid well. And that's another challenge. Because you can't compete with their clinical dollars.
No, right. Now, you've talked a little bit about this, but also during your tenure, there was the integration of continuing nursing education from Extension to the School of Nursing. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
I thought that had a lot of potential. I think that it brought the community into the university. It made a connection of the research and the scholarship of the faculty into continuing education. It confronted the faculty with another educational program. And so I thought it was a very important integration and part of the school. The people who've been involved in that have made major contributions to the academic programs in the school and running the school. I mean, they became part of it, became involved, or Barbara Gessner became involved in the undergraduate program. She was a faculty leader in helping with many of the committees and work in the school. So I think that was a good integration. I've always wondered if we did take advantage of all the things we might have done with that and could have done with that. There was, I did my research in the education. I also thought there were opportunities in interdisciplinary opportunities in continuing education. And I'm hoping the Interdisciplinary Learning Center, that there may be a move again to interdisciplinary. The university is moving in interdisciplinary things, interdisciplinary appointments between departments. I think there are opportunities now to maybe capture some of that. But the funding and the different challenges in health sciences over time made it difficult to sort of bring that together. And I always thought and hope that we can take more opportunities. I delegated that to an associate dean and the faculty. I mean, I tried to be supportive and helpful and share ideas, but, as a dean, you have to let other people run things the way they think they should. You can challenge, you can encourage, you can't overrule. So I always wondered if you could have taken more opportunities. I don't know.
You created the school's Council of Visitors.
Right. All the schools and colleges were urged to have external advisory bodies to do that. And so I did that. And that was a very good opportunity to get nursing known within the community in ways that had not been known before in terms of understanding it at a level that they hadn't before. And these people became advocates, and helped with fundraising and a number of agendas. So this was not an easy thing to do, and it took a lot of effort and work. We probably really needed more staff time to help with that, because, you know, it takes intense time to work with people in this capacity. But it was a good idea and a good experience. And I think it's more critical today, especially if you want to fundraise for rebuilding or promote a new building.
And you also created the Dean's Club.
True.
You want to talk about that?
Well, that was a fun thing too. I mean, again, all of these, over time, you know, when I first came, there wasn't this expectation that the dean be so much involved in the community, and there wasn't this connection between the community and the university. And then I think there was a recognition that had to change, that the academic units had to immerse themselves in the community, inform the community, listen to the community in terms of the needs, and there was a whole different view of doing that. And then there was a whole new view, I think, in the last maybe 8 years, that we absolutely had to solicit funds and donors in order to survive. The state wasn't going to give us money to do what we needed to do. We had to have private dollars, and we had to recruit support and immerse the interest of people that gave to the school nursing. So it was a movement and a change in my role in terms of what I was expected to do. And I don't know if everybody really fully understood the change that came in terms of these external community things that deans were asked to do. It was a whole new job that wasn't there when I started.
And probably people didn't understand that.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think that people understand the external role of the dean. They see, because here, no dean in a school of nursing is also a department chair and runs all the faculty meetings and is that involved in the direct decision about tenure, involved in the day-to-day, decision-making at the front line. That's a huge job. It's a huge time-consuming, detail-oriented, politically focused job internally, and then to run the external world that you're supposed to run in the fundraising arm, and then to be nationally involved in organizations and representing the profession in ways that make the school public. Mm-hmm. Those are very different roles and very important roles, but the involvement as a department chair in this school of nursing is incredibly demanding and gets the dean involved in day-to-day details. Mm-hmm. So you have to be extremely organized, you're on 3 or 4 different planes all the time. And so I've always thought that the role of the department chair, that is the dean in the school, needs to be developed. And there needs to be a department chair or two to run the internal, to develop things. I clearly believe that there needs to be, and I've always proposed that. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't possible to define them. Pharmacy and human resources, I can't remember what's the other?
Ecology.
Yeah, it's not ecology. Ecology, right. They created not a real department chair that's legal, but within, they divided things up so they had area groups in which people divided into smaller groups to run things differently. And I've never been in a school nursing without department chairs. They're a very important academic role, very important. And in this school, the dean plays that role.
Now, you were concerned about the school's visibility. One of the things that you did was to establish the publication Nursing Dimensions.
Right. It seemed if we wanted to be recognized nationally and we wanted other people to know, because there were so many University of Wisconsin, so that's another problem. We had to get out there with something that was pretty spiffy. And so the amount of energy, time, and resources this cost is great for the school with minimal resources. But I thought it was very important to do that, and it made a big splash, and now everybody copies it. And so everybody has the nursing dimension, which makes us just one of many. But the cost of this publication is excessive, you know, in terms of I lobbied all my career to get the public affairs and health sciences, which actually has funds supposed to be allocated for public affairs for the School of Nursing, to do this. I finally succeeded, because I told them if they didn't, I was going to take that FTE and put it in the university public affairs. I wasn't going to work with them, because they would not, the medical school, the hospital primarily, was using all of the staff resources. And they saw themselves working for the hospital. And we turned that around when I was chair of the health sciences mm-hmm. group, that we were going to do something very different. There was FTEs for pharmacy and nursing, and they were going to spend some time with us. And so finally now they write the articles and help publish that. So that was a hard-fought thing that I think was successful. I think it's less effective now since everybody has one, but it certainly gives us a chance to tell our story.
I think, I can't say to the overall effectiveness, but I think that alumni have been very impressed.
Good.
And I think the, you know, I've gotten a lot of comments from alumni on nursing dimensions, you know, and I think...
Because I think it's helped the alumni know the working of it.
Oh, yes.
And it's helped the community, like all these council of visitors and the people we send it to. I mean, they're getting information they never had.
Exactly.
And I think it's changed the knowledge base of
right.
what we do.
Right.
So, and it gives... It also helps different people. We write about different people in the school and gives them some
right.
visibility.
Right. Now, another thing, I understand that you had a real problem getting science for the school, labeling the school of nursing.
Told me there were committees I couldn't have a sign, there were no signs for anything like that, and I said, well, here's a sign for this school and that school, now why is it I can't have one? And it took, I don't know how many years, because it wasn't a big deal, it just made me mad that
right.
nobody could find the school of nursing,
right.
there was no sign, there was no entrance. And everybody else had these things, and they said no, and there was a committee that had to do it. And so, and then I finally convinced them that there were enough, quote, signs that it should be done, and they said I'd have to pay for it. And I said, now, do all these other schools pay for the signs? No. Well, then I said, I won't pay for it either. So, I mean, it was an incredible, I cannot figure out why they were so... You know, and we had this fire or something, I can't remember, in the School of Nursing, and they said it was University Hospital, and I use that as an example now, even though it was burning. So I think it was symbolic of something, I don't know.
I think so too, but I think it's really incredible.
So anyway, it's, and of course, it pleased me no end when on the planning documents they finally put potential school nursing on there. I mean, you know, so that we could have a visible
right.
place that was not integrated into
right.
the, lost into the thing. But I think it was symbolic for the university's real acceptance of us being a legitimate academic unit.
Another thing that you did was to encourage the development of postdoctoral studies.
Oh, I did, and it seems like it took way too long to get people convinced to do it. And I also think nurses wait so long to do their doctorate. You know, the postdoc is really almost impossible, because by then they're supporting families and they need to mm-hmm. make a living, and you know, they don't have, and the funds in that pot are very minimal. And most people don't have the resources to do that. So it seemed like it took way too long to get as many as we had. Getting funding for it was a challenge, but we did. And there needs to be, I think, a lot more effort for that and a lot earlier postdoctoral experiences, you know, for younger people than we're now doing.
Also, there was an increasing number of international students.
I don't know if I had much to do with that except to be very supportive of these students, welcome them, find ways to get them mentored and assisted. The university had great reputation internationally, and I think we were lucky. I also think some of the faculty were really into international things and got connected. So I think this enriched, these students were very interesting, they were very good students. It enriched our academic experience. It didn't help us get faculty or for the United States, but it certainly enriched our understanding of nursing scholarship.
Now, another of your accomplishments was developing a closer working relationship with the Nurses Alumni Association and the School of Nursing.
Well, this took a bit of doing, a bit of talking, a bit of challenging, but it was clear that in order for the school to be promoted, understood, and we needed resources to be helpful to projects, that we needed a partner in the alumni organization rather than a small group of people who, you know, would meet and talk about history. We needed an absolute advocate and support group that would help us move the school forward and lobby for our positions. And getting the work done for the alumni organization was a challenge for them and us in terms of secretarial support, and integrating it into the school made challenges administratively, but on the other hand, we were able to provide a level of support and help that allowed, you know, the work to get done and for us to become, you know, more integrated and more supported. And again, these external bodies, I saw other schools, alumni organizations doing major work, major fundraising, major, you know, support of the schools, lobbying for them as a I always thought we needed more groups out in the state in different places, and we tried to get, you know, groups going. It's very hard to do without, you know, staff time and whatever to do, but it seems like there was a lot of alumni at this school that could be helpful. And I think nursing is going to have to call all those alumni in across the nation to help lobby for what we need for the future. So it was an important thing to do and to move forward. So.
And another thing, you started a fund drive for a new school nursing building.
I wanted a new nursing school building worse than anything and felt like we should have had it earlier. Had we had a visionary chancellor, who understood the dynamics of the health sciences at the time in which there was a real need for space, we would have had one. Had Donna Shalala still been here, I think we would have had it. Because the hospital needed our space, it was easily, they could have had this space for about a third of what they would have built new space for. We could have had a building built and they could have had this space, which is right over the cancer center. They could have had a new cancer center by now. But the chancellor's changed, and the dean of medicine, you know, as you remember, it was a new person and he got in trouble, and, you know, there was a lot of transition in office. And David Ward was not yet understanding the health sciences at a key time. And the view in medicine was that they had to have about 10 times the space that could be documented from my point of view. So they said this wasn't big enough because they had other vision. But I think there's more logical people in place in the health sciences leadership in the university hospitals and more, so it might work. it could have at the time, they could have had that space and we could have had a new building for what it would have cost to build it then. But we didn't have, I spent a lot of time lobbying for this, trying to get university administration, and it was just a time of transition between the deans, the chancellors, and there was just so many other issues that they finally decided later after I resigned that this was a great idea.
Oh, I think it is a great idea.
But it was, again, hard to convince people who believed in grandiosity. You know, they just needed so much more space, and I think it's reasonable. And they still are in a plan to raise way more than I think is possible at this point in time. I think they can raise a lot of money, but I don't think mm-hmm. they can raise that much. So hopefully there is a view now, I think, that it's needed. And it will, we also have a donor that, you know, potential for quite a lot of money, almost all of it, the mm-hmm. medical school that take it away.
Mm-hmm.
They insisted that her money, the view was that this is Shapiro's on people who, you know, he left the school of nursing and school of medicine money, and then she left the school of nursing and medicine money, and the idea is how it should be split. I think it was 80-20 when he died, and so the university officials in the foundation and some of her legal advisors think that it should be split the same way that he did, even though her will doesn't split it that way, the medicine, because they believed it's his money. I said, it isn't his money, it's her money. She couldn't have any money, she was a nurse. I said, no, that's not true, because she was a director of nursing.
Right.
And besides, you know, it is her money and her choice, whatever she wants to do. And so I worked very hard to try to get, you know, some agreement about what her wishes were, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of did she, and they insisted that it should go 80. School medicine, 20 school nursing. But even if they split it 50-50, the school nursing could be dealt. Unless she did something different with her will after I was born. So, I mean, I think that's an issue of sharing donors and how it's split and how it's shared. And again, we had a view that it was his money and ought to be split the same way. And you can imagine my reaction.
Well, I hope I live to see a new school and nursing building.
I do too. I hope I live to see it.
Any other accomplishments that you want to talk about? You obviously did a lot.
Well, I think we've talked about enough of the accomplishments. It was a wonderful opportunity and a demanding but great career. I think we made some progress in creating the learning center. I was on the original committee that designed and created and proposed that, and it got put on a shelf until, because again, we were the chancellors were changing and whatever, and so I was part of creating that idea with the committee in health sciences, and we were able to, somebody liked the idea, kind of picked it up in the political arena, Tommy Thompson, I think, and so we had it ready, we had it on the table, and so I think getting the learning together, I think there's a lot of potential for interdisciplinary health science
yes.
in the future if we want to focus on
mm-hmm.
it. So that interdisciplinary work, I did an interdisciplinary teaching, I did research with them, the secondary concentrations, you know, all the things that we did to try to build to an interdisciplinary world, I think is not yet fully accomplished, but there are seeds. I also think there are practice seeds here that never were fully recognized in their totality. They were sort of separate silos in which people created bunny owns, clinical opportunities. We created joint appointments with the GINC, which I thought we could have moved in a lot more directions with the joint appointments with nurse practitioners, advanced mm-hmm. practice, if there would have been more support for them. I had to do that and push with some degree of resistance, but I think that's going well, and those people integrated. The South Madison Community mm-hmm. Center is a strong, I use private dollars to make that work. And believe that that was a strong thing, even though the people in it sometimes didn't think they were recognized for it. It was a very important seed, so that the practice seeds are here, have yet to be fully endorsed by the entire vision and faculty. Partly again because we're walking in a basic science university, and you know that's mm-hmm. not the thing. It's kind of like it had to be more quiet than it should have been, mm-hmm. and because there's too many physicians mm-hmm. in this community, it made it harder to do. We had to do it outside of the mainstream. Mm-hmm. We have less nurse practitioners than other mm-hmm. states. We're ranked down mm-hmm. in practice. Got the data the other day, and so we're not doing as well in the numbers of nurse practitioners practicing as other states. Mm-hmm. And that's partly because we have so many physicians mm-hmm. resistance to it.
Okay, now let's talk about a few other things. You have had your share of tragedy in your life. During your tenure in the School of Nursing, you married Greg Reuter, and sometime later he developed Alzheimer's disease. What impact did that have on your work? And, you know, how were you able to continue with all the accompanying stress?
Well, we had been married less than 5 years when his symptoms appeared. And it was an incredibly devastating disease that moved rapidly with crisis after crisis. I tried very hard not to bring it into my work, not to let people know the demands and the challenges that were there. I tried to work very hard to not let it get in the way. I don't think it did until maybe it just took, the toll of the work and whatever may have exhausted me to a point that maybe I didn't perceive things I should have or didn't recognize everything I should. On the other hand, I was still doing a lot of stuff,
right.
Still teaching,
right.
Managing all this. The stress and pain and dealing with the healthcare system was and you know it really took its toll. It was really people were, where is your husband? Why doesn't he ever come to things? There were negative remarks mm-hmm. about some of that was very hard to deal mm-hmm. with. And I don't know how much people knew about it. It didn't make a big deal out of it. Some people close to me couldn't avoid mm-hmm. knowing it, but I don't know what other people knew about. I remember telling the chancellor that when Greg had a real crisis, I said, I don't usually talk about this, but you need to know. I don't know what's going to happen about this, but this was a serious incident that you may hear about, and I just want you to know that I'm managing it. Because I was worried that it would become a complication. Mm-hmm. It didn't, so
mm-hmm.
I was I've learned a lot about caretaking, and as a result of my experiences. I've been working on a national committee in the Red Cross to create a program, if you will, for caregivers, family caregivers, in terms of education, support systems, transition, that type of thing that the Red Cross, using nurses and other volunteers, is going to come out with a family caregiver program because of the lack of resources for family caregivers and support systems. And so that's been a fun thing for me to do, to be part of a potential new program for people who have patients that they have to care for.
Well, when you look at the statistics about Alzheimer's and the projections, you know, obviously this is...
It's just
right.
And people are not paying attention to it. And, you know, this article here talks about caregivers have a higher rate of death. You know, there's all kinds of health problems because of the demands. And so, you know, it was important. I wrote the proposal, you know, did the literature research, was able to present some issues about what was needed. And so that's been fun to see the Red Cross take on, and I hope they continue to move forward.
And you've done some other things with the Red Cross.
Right. I've really been involved in the Red Cross. I love working for the Red Cross. And I was involved here early on. I've been involved on the board over about a 10-year period. I was the chair of the board. I chaired the Health and Safety Committee and helped develop new programs there. And I got appointed to the National Nursing Committee. So I work with the National Nursing Committee that has nurse liaisons in all states and tries to recruit nurses to volunteer for the Red Cross and does a number of things. I also am on the Midwest Regional Committee that reviews programs for quality and outcomes, and we charters them and does that. So I'm serving on that committee, and of course I was executive director during the tragedy, which was an incredible experience, since it was supposed to be finished by the end of the summer, and I was supposed to be teaching, and so I did that. And the Red Cross, the thing about the Red Cross is nobody, while you're doing it in an academic role, says thank you. But during the Red Cross, they thank people for everything. You know, they make you feel good every day. And they have a wonderful volunteer system that includes a lot of university people who do a lot of great things. So I've enjoyed working in the Red Cross and have found that very satisfying.
And what other things have you done since you resigned from the deanship?
Well, I wrote a proposal for a fellowship at NIH and was offered an opportunity to do that. It became a challenge going back and forth between Washington and Madison, and I finally decided that I didn't want that level of demands where I was just busy and running around all the time, that was more than I could handle. But I had an interesting experience writing this proposal. It had to do with caretaking, too. And then I've been working for University Nursing Service for a little over a year, and I've had opportunities to do what you might call sort of innovative projects to tackle some of our old problems in new ways. And I've written three different grants. Two of them were funded. Wisconsin Hospital Association, not much money. They didn't give us much to do these major projects, but the University Hospital is supporting them. One was to recruit the Chancellor Scholars and the Powers Knapp Scholars into health careers, those who were undeclared majors. And so we've been working on having shadowing experiences and projects and so forth to try and recruit some of these very talented minority students into administration, pharmacy, nursing, and medicine, less so, but some of the health sciences. And that's been a fun project, but it's, you know, it's a challenge to do. But it was an idea of working. I had been a mentor for a Chancellor Scholar, and they're very talented young people. And so
thought we would take that approach. And then I'm chairing a committee that is looking at how we can create new roles for senior nurses, those 50 and older, so we can keep them in the workforce and we can get some who've retired because of the demands to come back and work in these roles. That they're lighter roles in terms mm-hmm. of physical demands, they have more flexibility in terms of work schedules. And so that committee is now proposing several different roles for those nurses. I've also been involved in management development. I've chaired a committee to try and look at what the clinical nurse manager role needs, what kind of support, what kind of systems they can be in. I've been teaching both the interns, I helped create an ADN intern program, and I've been teaching in the ADN as well as in the nursing forum, which is for clinical nurse managers. It's sort of a case study method mm-hmm. where they learn about management and leadership and stuff. So I've been working on all those. There's several other mm-hmm. little projects we've developed, a payback system for the new graduates. If they'll work for so many months, they get $10,000. They work mm-hmm. through more to get. So we've been trying mm-hmm. to do things to recruit nurses, mm-hmm. to retain them, and to help them mm-hmm. in their role. So that's been satisfying because it's allowed me to sort of try some ideas that aren't the norm. And it's very hard, though, to get the projects finished and in place because of the complexity and the crisis in the system. Mm-hmm. But it's been satisfying in that it's allowed me to work directly with nurse leaders in a very different environment during this transition. So I'm hoping to continue both that and the Red Cross role when I...
After you resign.
After I
resign. And you plan to resign the end of this year?
In January the 12th, I think, is my...
Okay. Other plans for the future?
Well, I've enjoyed this flexibility, and I have enjoyed traveling and doing things I've never had time to do, to travel, to spend time with family and friends, and to read and study things I want to read and study. So it's been, I've never done that before, and all of a sudden I thought, boy, this is nice. So I'm doing it. And I have a new personal life that is satisfying and interesting. And I have two new grandbabies that I, from Greg's daughter, his two young girls, and that's delightful. So things are, I really have decided it's good. I was encouraged to consider the directorship at the Red Cross and that CEO position, and I loved it. It would be a great job, but I decided I like a little bit more flexibility at this point in my life.
Right.
That's new for me.
Right.
Strange.
Well, once again, we're in a period of critical shortage of nurses. How do you view the future of nursing and nursing education?
Well, Sydney, I'm really worried about it.
Right.
I'm absolutely devastated with where we are today with where I thought we would be when I was at this point in my life. It seems like all the things we've worked for, we're again confronted with not having enough staff to do the roles that we think they should, not having enough faculty all of a sudden. I mean, we have not produced the numbers of faculty, and when we did, they were old, and so they don't last as long as they need to. The nurses are starting late in their career, and the demands in care are incredible, and for nurses to make a difference and to do their job, it is just the biggest challenge I've ever seen. And I'm very worried about it. I'm worried about how we're going to find a solution to how to deliver nursing care and how we're going to pay for it. There has to be some shift in resources towards the caring people from the curing people. There has to be a shift if we're going to survive the aging population and the challenges that we have in chronic illness and that we just talked about in Alzheimer's. The people we need are the caring people. And we are not, have not been, and are not focusing on how to restructure the work, how to restructure the resources, and how to deliver the services to people who need care that's not just
episodic, it's
right.
continuous, and I'm very worried about it. And I don't know, seems like nursing always says, we'll just work harder, or we'll do it with less education, or whatever, or we don't get the focus and the attention we need. Now, some of that's coming. On the other hand, the demands are what's needed.
Oh, yes.
Are so incredible. Teaching this course and reading all the details about the cost and the potential and the terrible challenges of healthcare delivery is very discouraging. And I don't know that I've ever been so discouraged. I don't like that. I'd like to be positive.
Right.
I'd like to believe that the people that we've mentored and supported and are here to take the next phase can do it. And I think they'll give it a try. It is an incredible mm-hmm. challenge.
Yes, I agree. You want to talk about the future of the School of Nursing?
The future of the School of Nursing. Well, I worry about that too. But I believe the school is built on a solid base and with strong, hardworking, committed people that have been part of it. And so I believe the school will survive and will make significant efforts to do a quality job. But the escalating cost, the demands are such that there has to be a relook at that. There were times when I thought that if we had less schools of nursing in Wisconsin and had satellite schools or something
yeah.
that could it could shift the resources, then we might be able to survive or you know produce what we need to with the resources we have. But there has got to be a new thinking. One thing that was encouraging is that some of the healthcare agencies who want nurses so badly are willing to fund some education. So the healthcare institutions may have to start funding the educational programs again. You know, and of course
mm-hmm.
we work hard, that didn't happen.
Right.
On the other hand, that may well have to happen. But it, of course, I think we're sophisticated enough to do it in a way they're not going to run the program.
Right.
They're not going to be,
right.
you know, just workhouses.
Right.
But I think there's got to be a new source of funding. And I also believe very strongly that distance learning for graduate education, including practitioner and doctoral education, may have to move forward so that we can mix students up across the country
mm-hmm.
And the very specialized faculty we have can teach doctoral students or graduate students in lots of places.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pushing hard for that. And there was some resistance. That was some of the issues that some people had, at least one person had with my leadership, was that I was pushing us to think about and consider distance learning because of the net, it's almost impossible to get a faculty in every area.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to start sharing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to share with Minnesota and Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why don't we do this? And why don't we share the practitioner things? We take the lead. We could be the leaders. We should be, rather than allowing some of these small schools
mm-hmm.
to develop these programs
mm-hmm.
in distance learning. And so we're going to have to rethink how we do it. And share people across places, and we've got to do a lot of new creative things. We've got to figure out how to deliver care differently.
Yeah, I agree.
And so it's a real challenge,
mm-hmm.
and I never dreamed if we'd worked as hard as you and I have worked all of our time,
right.
and we didn't have resources. Like, I taught when I was an undergraduate student because I didn't have faculty. I never dreamed by the time I was here and did all these things that we would have a serious shortage of faculty. And we're going to.
We're going to, right?
And the problem is that people don't go on to school.
Mm-hmm.
And they're too old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean, you know, they just don't have long enough careers.
Right. Right.
So I'm very worried about that, but I do think the School of Nursing is in a position to be a leader to move forward to continue quality program. It's got to have a new building,
yeah,
right, a visibility,
right,
and a new infusion of money.
Right. Any other thoughts?
Well, I want to be positive, and I didn't want to say I was worried, but then I'm not honest. I do think there are people who have the ability and the commitment to move it forward. We can't get as many people to move into the leadership positions these days either. They're tough.
Right.
People have faculty roles are better, they're better paid.
Right.
And it's hard to get leaders, nursing leaders in academia, clinical leaders in nursing service, and it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. But we've survived before, I guess.
Right. We've been through lots of crises. I remember one time looking in the American Journal of Nursing, and it seemed like nursing was at a crossroads like about every 10 years. But I think we're back at one of those crossroads.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe because every time we get to a crossroads, we get really worried. We
mm-hmm.
pull together, we figure out something,
yes,
to do something new.
Right.
And I'm sure there are people out there who will figure that out.
Vivian, thank you very much.